This tape contains the program Christmas in History in 5 seconds. Rediffusion presents Christmas in History. We try in this program to trace the history of Christmas with notes way back in time, and also to trace the progress of Christmas over the centuries. Washington Irving, American writer who achieved fame for his Tales of the Alhambra, said in his sketchbook in 1819 that one of the least pleasing effects of modern refinement was the havoc it had made among the hearty old holiday customs. He stated, too, that many of the games and ceremonials of Christmas had entirely disappeared and had become matters of dispute and speculation among thinkers. This writer was painting a memorable picture of what G.K. Chesterton called the feudal Christmas, a Christmas as romanticized by Sir Walter Scott, who wrote, "England was merry England when old Christmas brought its sports again." G.K. Chesterton was one of the several 19th century writers who had recorded the traditional observances of Christmas in an attempt to save them from the destruction that seemed imminent. Even then, Christmas in Britain was on the eve of a sort of rejuvenation that was carded to attain much popularity. The English Christmas was largely reshaped in the 19th century, but to understand what happened, it is necessary to look back to the Christmas out of which it had developed. To be truthful, Christmas could be traced back to the beginnings of human society. Christmas festivities were derived at that time from pagan midwinter celebrations during what was called the December solstice. The promotion of fertility was one of its chief purposes. The eating and drinking are taken from those primeval banquets. Other customs going back to pre-Christmas times included evergreens, ghost stories, and the like. The story of the English people from conversion to conquest begins with the instructions Pope Gregory sent to St. Augustine. He was to be careful not to alarm the people by interference with heathen ceremonies, and Gregory warned him to allow the pagans to kill and eat large numbers of oxen to the glory of God at the Christmas festival, as they did in earlier times to Satan. We must remember that the early church was obliged to accept many pagan observations until its position was strengthened. It was King Alfred who joined the church in ordering that the 12 days of Christmas should be kept as a period of festival and of abstention from work. A Christian background was provided for the feasting, drinking, and jousting. The first chapter in the story of Christmas in Britain must be closed about 1043, when the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle spoke of December the 25th as Christmas instead of midwinter. By the time of the Norman conquest, paganism was blended with Christianity, and for the first time, the customs had a communal character, whether it was in the church or in a castle. However, it took time before developments left any real mark.
Adam lay down and bound up in a bond. 4,000 winter thought it not too long, and all was for an apple that he took, as clerk and finder written in their book. He had the apple taken, been the apple taken, been.
The nativity drama was soon to become a chief form of popular art and forerunner of the secular theater. It was the carol that became the main literary glory of medieval England at Christmas time. It came to England by way of France and Italy and was adopted from the dance. It was to become one of the loveliest expressions of Christmas in verse.
Thank you.
Then came the Restoration. Carols and carol singing went into decline, though this was due rather to the development of instrumental music than to religious reasons. On the surface, things continued much the same as before, so that by the time Cromwell took things in hand, trouble started. Traditional celebrations of Christmas offended the Puritans. Once Christmas was abolished by Act of Parliament in Cromwell's time, and the house sat on Christmas Day, there was much disorder, drunkenness, gambling among all classes. Church and state worked hard at trying to destroy customs because the old Christmas of the time reflected the social and economic system that was rapidly changing. The agricultural revolution, the expansion of trade, the growth of towns, the liquidation of monasteries and monastic estates, increase between the social classes, all these things brought on the death of the feudal Christmas of the manor and medieval days. The writers of the 16th and early 17th centuries deplored the decline of rural Christmas and blamed it on the exodus of the rich from London, the poverty of farmers, and even in those days, the high cost of living.
All the world of black and white, of snow so cold and crisp, and like the sharp and falling, we are going on through the night. Ah, ha, ho, 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 la. Ah, ha, ho, ho, hey. Lightning flying over the snow with a hey, ha, 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 ho, ha, ho, and sleigh bells ringing gaily, singing merrily we go.
Merrily we go, sing, 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 sing.
This is Christmas in History, a special presentation of Rediffusion. The Puritans rebuked Herrick for his carols. Hezekiah Wood called Christmas in 1656 the heathen's feasting day, the true Christian fasting day, and the multitude's idle day. He wrote this with the support of the religious fanatics of the period. Addison, Southey, and Cowper, to mention a few, bore witness to the fact that the traditional celebrations of Christmas never truly died in rural England. Leigh Hunt and Charles Lamb gave evidence of the survival of old customs in Britain. They even spoke of the brisk trade in Norfolk turkeys, which developed in 18th century. Such writers left a record of the importance Londoners placed on a good Christmas table. Christmas was in decline by 1769. The author of Poor Robin's Almanac wrote in London, "And Christmas, scarcely should we know, did not the almanac it show." David Garrick summed up the general view in A Christmas Tale in 1774. "Behold a personage well known to fame, once loved and honored, Christmas is thy name." Lamb in 1827 stated, "Old Christmas cometh not with his wonted gait. He is shrunk 9 inches in the girth, but is yet a lusty fellow." The Christmas of Pickwick Papers, published in 1836 and 1837, seems to be separated by an age from The Christmas Carol, published in 1843. Pickwick stressed the material side of the festivities and looked back to the 18th century. The Carol looked forward and was largely responsible for the fact that Charles Dickens, its author, more than any person, is associated with the modern concept of Christmas. Without neglecting the good things of the season, the Carol dwelt upon the spiritual, though not specifically the religious, aspects of the festivity. Dickens translated into literary form the feelings many people were beginning to share on both sides of the Atlantic. The part of the Prince Consort, who is often linked with Dickens as the founder of the modern Christmas, was even more passive. Dickens pushed the course of events by writing The Prince Consort by royal example. And so we see that Christmas was stimulated by writers, thinkers, and the Christian socialist movement in Britain and in other countries. That it should become the festival of the Christ child was also natural in the circumstance of the age. The innocence and helplessness of children appealed to humanitarians. It was a time when family life was strengthened by the revival of religion, and in this, the British royal family set an example which was to be followed by all walks of society. The Christmas Carol was a protest against the hypocrisy that had made a mockery of conventional Christmas sentiments. Ebenezer Scrooge had the courage of his convictions, which was more than could be said for his fellow countrymen. Punch, in 1841, spoke out against the conditions of the times. Let the physical weight of all corporations, all private benefactors of the poor, be distributed in eatables to the indigent and famishing, it said. The reshaping was taking place at last. Twelfth Night and Wassailing were discarded. Industrial workers and children had no other holiday than December 25th, and the giving of presents was transferred from New Year's to Christmas. Twelfth Cake became the Christmas cake, then back came carol singing. Carol singing had its origin in rural folk music, the nativity play and the manger scene, and later the pantomime. The Christmas tree, the Christmas card, and Father Christmas were new innovations. The Prince Consort was mistakenly credited for the Christmas tree, but it was known in Germany long before its introduction in Britain in 1840. The Christmas card was of British origin, and in the age of the penny post became a practical answer for exchange of greetings, communicating with relatives who could not be greeted in person. This is Christmas in History, and we're taking the commercial aspect of Christmas. The original Father Christmas will be talked about in a while, but today the manufacture of toys, Christmas cards, crackers, ornaments, and lights, not forgetting festive niceties. It's a billion-dollar business. Then there's the strange story of Father Christmas. The original was believed to have been St. Nicholas. The white-bearded saint was bishop of Myra in Asia Minor. He died in AD 325. St. Nicholas was reported to have appeared around the 6th of December, one year early in the 4th century, riding his white horse and accompanied by his Moorish servant Peter. While young people flocked around the saint, he made his way from door to door, leaving gifts for the good children and switches for the bad. The Dutch called him Sinterklaas. Fat, jolly Santa Claus. Santa evolved in New York from St. Nick of the Dutch colonists and sprang vividly to life in Clement Clark Moore's "'Twas the Night Before Christmas." Moore was a professor at the Episcopal Theological College, wrote the lines for his family, and they were published in 1823 without his approval. Moore was afraid the lines would prejudice his reputation as a serious poet. Like the Christmas Carol, they were perfectly timed. They struck the imagination and became popular. The jolly, fat, red-coated gent, the idol of hundreds of millions, was here to stay. And so it did take some time for new forms to develop. And the Christmas did not fully establish itself until the present century. Nothing is more remarkable about the contemporary Christmas than the universal appeal. Fortunately, the present pattern seems destined to endure at least as long as the spiritual values that it enshrines and the social attitudes that it expresses last.
Oh,
greetings that mean the same through the ages. This has been Christmas in History. In this program, we've tried to trace how pagan and religious customs and changes in society through the ages have all shaped the character of the festive season that we know as Christmas. One that we celebrate in traditional forms and one to which we add new types of celebrations as the society keeps changing. We hope you have enjoyed this historical comment on Christmas, and we also hope that you enjoy your celebration of this beautiful time of the year, Christmas time. A Merry Christmas to you. This program has been produced by Oliver Chandler, with technical operations by Clyde Clark. Frank Pardo speaking.